I thought I would, I find language is interesting in that.
Turn it around where you see it.
Yeah. The origins of such things. So I found a couple of articles that take the Hebrew language back prior to this incarnation. Back to, as far as I know, the original, the way that the language is originally written. So the first one, of course, is the Elf. And I found it interesting because it's originally it was just the script that was used was an ox head. And it's, I mean, you can pretty much see that even with my pitiful drawing. And then as you go down through these, you can see where originally the language is really more of a pictographic language, a hieroglyphic language, if you will. And then over time and through influence of others, other cultures, it transformed into what we have got now over here. So the first one is an ox. That's what the picture that's presented is. The second one is a tent floor plan, which, you know, for them people back then, that was their homes. They didn't have permanent residences for the most part like we do. The next one is a foot. The next one is a door.
Can you give more detail for the recording instead of saying the next one?
Well, the the first one, the ox,
is
the elf, which is the first letter. The second letter, or pictograph, and this is the tent, the floor plan, which is bet. The elf.
The bet.
Means strong, power, leader. The bet means family, house. The next one is, the pictograph for it is a foot. But the meaning, which is gimel, means to gather or to walk.
That's number three.
Number three. Number four, which is dalet, is a door. That means move, hang, or entrance.
What was the first thing you said? Move?
Move. The fifth one, it actually depicts a man with arms raised, which is hey. That one right there. So originally that one was a man with his arms raised, and then it was changed into that. That's number five.
Is that?
Why is that picture different then?
Not really.
That picture looks different than that one.
Which one?
Number five.
This here or this here?
That one.
This here?
Yeah. What is that?
That is a man. That's the original. These here in this column are all the original.
So these are not the original?
Pictographs.
No. These are not the ancient Hebrew.
Oh, okay. You're showing the ancient.
I'm showing you the
ancient.
Most ancient
the
Hebrew
most,
that
the
they
most
know.
Most ancient. Okay.
Most ancient. And then they, of course, were revised.
Well, what happened was they were involved with other cultures and people. They adopted some of the Phoenician script. And then it actually changed three or four times from this original script. Like I said, the original script was more of a hieroglyphic type script. I mean, you can pretty much see just in the way that it's drawn what each thing might represent. Okay, where were we at? Five? Oh yeah, five. The picture that is given, it's a man with his arms raised. See?
Touchstone.
Yeah, touchstone.
The baby would kiss.
I had to say that.
It means
fit too perfect.
It means look, reveal, and breath. And that is the H, the hay. The sixth one is in the original, right here.
Yeah.
That was a tent peg. And that's the vav there.
Yeah. The mob.
Yes. Let's see. So the picture was a tent peg, and its meaning is add, secure, hook. Yeah, I mean, they've even got early, middle, late, and then the current alphabet.
Right.
So there's like four different evolutions of the language.
So you said, because six is also a number of a man. What did you say it was again?
It's a tent peg, and the meaning is add, secure, and hook. Of course, there's other meanings to it. These are just some samples. The next one, which is number seven, which coincides with, I don't know how to pronounce that, Zagan?
Zagan.
that depicts a mattock.
Hammer,
mattock, you know, it says mattock. So, you know, most of this stuff are very, you know, it's just very simple, ordinary things that...
Mattock is something to dig with.
Yeah. Yeah. okay, so that was number seven. It is, I wish they had these numbered.
Chet,
eight. Well, that's Zagan. Zagan means food, cut, and nourish. And then the next one, which is number eight, is Chet. That is this one right here. The original depicted a tent wall. It means outside, divide, half. The next one, number nine, which is I guess Tet. It is what's depicted in the original is a basket. It means to surround, contain, and mud.
Mud.
The next one, number 10, which represents 10. The first nine are in order with the alphabet. And then number 10 is the yud, right there.
That little mark.
Looks like a yud.
Yeah.
Now, the original was, it depicted an arm with a closed hand.
That looks like a leaf to me. This one.
Yeah, perhaps. But that's originally what it was supposed to be depicting. It's, let me see. It means to work, throw, worship. Again, that's number 10. Number 20, because that's how they did their things. The first nine depicted 1 through 9, and then the next 10 through 90. But the next one is an open palm. So it's kind of like...
Kaf. It's Kaf.
Yeah, it's Kaf. It's the... one's a closed hand and one's an open palm.
Same as Judah, because it means...
Outstretched.
Yeah, outraised hand.
It means to bend, open, allow, and tame. The next one is number, numerically is 30. That is Lamed. Oh, sorry. It is depicted originally as a shepherd's staff.
And sheep, didn't you say when you were talking earlier, thou rod and thy staff, they comfort me?
Yes.
Well, I did study on it, and it's, I guess it's called, I mean, whatever you call comfort, because one end of the staff was for poking to get their attention.
The other was to
and pull the crook them. Was to get them back in order.
Well, it means teach, yoke, and bind. Okay, and then the next one is number 40. Which is the Mem, which Mom is taught on as the one of the mother letters, is depicted as water. It's basically, it was just waves. That's how they depicted it. It means chaos, mighty, and blood. And all of these more or less coincide with some sort of a phonetic alphabet. You know, Alph is A, B, G, D, you know, it goes on down.
Is that a leaf or?
It's a leaf.
It's a leaf. Whatever. But anyway, Mem, like I said, it means chaos, mighty, and blood. I think that's about where we left off last time as far as the rest of this stuff. I couldn't find very much on anything past 400, the Tav. That's apparently is the rest of that, the 500, 600, 700, 800, 900, and 1,000, fairly new additions, things that really weren't used back then. And some of them stop at the shin, some of the source material that I looked at. But anyway, so what I'm going to do is erase this stuff, and we'll start with none. Just in case I didn't go over Mem, I can't remember if we got to it or not. Traditionally, Mem has several direct meanings, waters, like what's depicted there, people, nations, languages, tongues.
Well, that's what they, if I could just, the sea is depicted as being people in scripture. Sea is depicted as being people, nations, multitudes,
right,
and tongues.
It's the mystical symbol of the revealed and of the concealed. Also, the first letter in the names of Moshe is Moses, and Mashiach, or the anointed one, equated by some with the coming Messiah. Moses was given the revealed evidence of the Creator's sovereignty over his creation, and the Messiah represents the concealed part of the celestial rule to which humanity submits in faith alone. So I guess you could say one's kind of like the law and the other one's the grace. Okay.
Is in our year 2016, which is beautiful because it meant to tent peg, make something secure, and our hook. I think that's beautiful. That's another promise for six being in this 2016 year, a big change. The opposite, I think, of what people might be feeling.
Well, according to numerology, 2016 would be the letter, would be the number 9 also. Okay.
Oh, yeah, because you, I see what you're doing.
Okay, so the next one, which is number 50, is none. Kind of a curious little pictograph. When I first saw it, this, I thought it was a snake, but perhaps not. Okay. According to this, it says, it can be taken to mean gaffing hook for fishing and to waste away. It is a letter sometimes used as a substitute letter in order to disguise a name. In its mystical sense, none represents everlasting faithfulness, the emergence of the soul, and just as the soul is a spark of the divine, so is God's grace available to all.
I think what I've seen so far from what you've said while you're doing that is you're getting that mixture of law and grace in the Hebrew.
In the letters.
Letters.
Well, what none means, I mean, what this little thing here means is seed.
Is what?
Seed.
Seed.
It also, well, actually, that's what is depicted, is seed. Also means continue, heir, and son.
Get. All right.
Okay, so that was number 50. The next one is number 60. This is, well, they have it as sin here, but I guess it's Semek.
Semek. Yeah. S-A. Semek. Stomach?
Yeah.
It looks kind of like a D.
It means womb in some Hebrew.
That's number 60.
That's very similar to that diagram.
It means thorn. That's what is depicted here as a thorn. It has listed as meanings here is continue, I'm sorry, no, grab, hate, and protect. It also has it listed as to trust, depend upon, and support. It symbolizes divine support and protection and is associated with the process of memory. It also depicts abundance and completion. Alright. So I'm just going to put it as it has it here. And that was number 60. The next one is interesting.
Looks like an eye.
That is Ajin.
Ajin.
It's a Y.
Yeah, it's a funny looking Y. It, you know, its depiction is an eye. So in the original Hebrew, it was, you just basically drew an eye. It means watch, know, and shade. This means eye, wellspring, source, or center, and is linked with the Egyptian eye of Horus. So Ayin is therefore the symbol of perception and insight of the physical eye and of the spiritual eye. It illustrates symbolically that the human eye can be taken as a macrocosm of the universe. Okay, and
if we could just see.
Yeah, well, we were talking about earlier. So that's 70.
We could see it all.
The next one is Pei, P-E-T-E-Y. And that one's kind of curious too. It's like, that. And the original upside down G. Originally, well, what this hieroglyph depicts is a mouth. Means blow, scatter, edge. This letter represents both speech and silence, and is closely linked with the art of healing. The ultimate purpose of creation is for humanity to learn to sing the praises of the Almighty and study the Torah. So, I guess there's your long grace again. And that is, I think that's 80. Yeah. So its numerical value is 80. Okay, the next one is 90.
Zeddy, I think.
Tzedi or something like that, yeah. It's not another Y looking thing, but with a different bent to it. And the original pictograph is supposed to represent a trail or a path. It means journey, chase, hunt. It is also the first letter in the word T-Z-A-D-D-I-G, whatever, however you say that, or righteous man. It stands for righteousness and humility. But although every one of these expresses righteousness in a uniquely individual way, true righteousness can only exist in God. And that's number 90.
True righteousness can only exist in what?
In God.
In God.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The next one is 100.
Cuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a P here.
Huh?
Looks like a P here.
Yeah.
Neat how things evolve over time. Even our English language is changing. New words are always, you know, often being added. There's people,
oh, yeah.
People come up with these words and then they end up being picked up by others and then they get in our dictionaries as words, you know.
This one, it's 100. It means what this is depicting is sun on the horizon.
Sun on the horizon.
Means condense, circle, time. There's numerous traditional meanings for it, including to buy or sell, eye of the needle, an ape or monkey. Esoterically, it is the sign for holiness, both human and divine, and a symbol for abstinence and control. So it also represents various growth cycles of our world. So it's probably used agriculturally as a symbol. Okay, the next one is Resh. I believe it's 200.
It's like a 7.
Yeah. You got to have a degree in calligraphy to write Hebrew correctly. Anyway, the pictorial description is the head of a man. This is 200. It means first, top, beginning, head, chieftain, supreme one. Paradoxically, Reish can also be taken to mean to become impoverished. That stands for the challenge of the choice of greatness or degradation, between which elements there is a very fine dividing line. Resh also represents the fact that the wicked retain the potential to repent at any chosen moment. So there again, within the single one single character, you have both law and grace. That was 200. And then 300 is shin. It's like that. That's the fire mother.
Looks like part of the candlestick.
Yeah,
three prongs.
Well, it goes back to that unknown letter because that represents the fire mother. We've already had the air mother and the water mother, and then we get in, he'll get into the rest of it later. I'll keep my mouth shut.
Supposed to depict two front teeth.
Really?
Oh, you bite.
Sharp, press,
eat,
and two. It means tooth and is the symbol of divine peace, power, and mastery, but also of corruption and falsehood. It's one of the holiest letters in the Hebrew language, and it appears on its own on the mezuzah attached to the doorpost of all Jewish households as the sign of El Shaddai.
Mezuzah? Mezuzah?
No, although it probably is similar root word, because that's where you get like when they do a bar mitzvah and they do mazel tov, that's where mazel tov comes from. The root word originally came from Maseroth.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's your divine feminine right there.
Yeah.
Well, you take that meat, you tear into that, use your front teeth, tear into that meat.
And that's represented by the number 300. Okay, the next one that most commonly, where it stops at as far as any kind of further exploration, I can't find any indication that anything beyond Tav was used. Really?
Number 400.
Tav.
Tav.
Until recent times. Now, I can't find anything written about it. But anyway, Tav, however you want to say it, it was simple. The original was a cross. And it depicts cross sticks. It depicts a cross. That's what it says. It's a mark, a sign, a signal, a monument. What it says here, mark or sign, it is also a symbol for vehicle of sacrifice. It's as tau is the final, as the final letter in the Hebrew alphabet, represents completion of the spiritual cycle and is a sign of truth and perfection. It denotes the final spiritual destination for humankind and is closely associated with the preceding letter shin.
So they call that the final letter in the spiritual alphabet?
Well, in everything that I can find. Now, they do, and I guess there is some evidence for this, have an additional one, that they found in the most ancient of Hebrew texts, but isn't found since then. And that is Yaha, or the 1000.
Yeah. That's the unknown.
So they did find that. I have found it actually written in the most ancient text, and I'll show you how.
Because, you know, it was my understanding that the thousand, the missing letter, was only in the Kabbalah, the mystic portion of the Hebrew,
well,
the Jewish show.
That's partially true and partially not true. Okay.
But now you're saying that it was found in the ancient.
Well, because there is no depiction for it in the middle late or new alphabet, but in the most ancient form they found it. And I'll show you what it looks like. Something like that.
A DNA. Ladder. Spiral.
This one, it means rope. Or that's what appears to be depicted, put it that way. This has it listed as twist, to darken, and wicked. But of course, because of what it is, it has no other, I couldn't find any other real meaning. And it doesn't really have a correlation with any other kind of languages. Specific letter. I mean, pretty much you can take any of these and match it up to Latin or Greek, you know.
So it's questionable by scholars that it doesn't exist.
Well, they know it exists because they have it.
Well,
but
when you say that,
but they don't know
they
what
found it in the ancient. It's not just part of the mystical.
No, it's not just, but apparently for whatever reason it was something that wasn't passed down or used, at least that they know of.
They didn't find any use for it.
Those letter designations looks to me like it's the same as the I up there. Mm-hmm. Or is that a
which
era?
The I up there. Looks a lot like that. But in my studies.
Well, that's how it's got it listed here.
Yeah, in the Kabbalah, it looks like a crown with seven points.
Yeah, I heard that.
And the three representing Father, Son, Holy Ghost.
Well, it looks
Ghost.
Like that in this picture over here.
And
well, it actually has both of the
things. I drew that picture.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got the rope you see over to the side.
Yeah.
And then it's got the crown.
From the Hebrew text, I drew.
So I mean,
to me, that looks like DNA too, or this a spiral, or a ladder, Jacob's ladder. You know.
Well, I mean, all you have to do is just look at like an old caduceus that was used. You know, they two serpents entwined on a pole that was used as, you know, to designate
healing.
Healing.
Yeah.
That looks like DNA to me.
Or yeah. Could be like your daddy said, if it the third eye.
Yeah, the third eye.
Yeah,
because it's three circles representing that eye here that completely closed up with bone there.
So I guess this one would be. If you wanted to use the Kabbalah.
Actually, that's 7 points.
Right, but two of you, the three of them you can't see.
Yeah, the three of them. Well, that is the mystical part, or spiritually it can be true or not. You know, what Moses did when he came off the mountain and threw the tablet down, he was angry because of what Aaron had done. What was that you said? Aaron had made.
Oh, he made him a golden calf, which was the age that had passed. It was
Taurus.
Taurus, and they were already in Aries, and not only that, but they were going back to what their old Egyptian way of doing things.
and he lied, because he said, told Moses, we just threw the gold in and this is what came out. We all know that's BS. They fashioned it.
And just, you know, as another kind of interesting note, that don't look like any seed I've ever seen except in biology. Right.
Well, what do you think?
It looks like sperm to me.
That's what I wrote down. I wrote down sperm because it looked more like sperm to me than yeah. seed. But actually, it really represents the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's just interesting that, you know, like, they've got that, and they've got this, and, you know.
Really?
Well, you also, when you were talking about the missing letter, 1,000, that having 7 prongs.
It does.
For some reason, it made me think of the mysteries in Revelation with the 7 spheres, 7 angels, 7 stars, or, you know.
A lot of
the 7 was used a lot in Revelation.
Mm-hmm. 7 sets of twins.
To depict the opening of the seals, the 7 seals that were opened, 7 angels. So it's that opening of those. The missing letter is the mysteries that we're looking into.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's the same thing in like Nordic runes. They have the unknown. It's the blank rune. It speaks of that. It speaks of the mysteries. Of
books are being opened. The book of life.
Things that are unknown becoming known, mysteries being revealed. Like I said, I couldn't really find much of anything on the final cat, what they call the final
Kaf
numbers, the Kaf, the Mem,
right.
The 500, 600, 700, 800, 900. That must have came out
of... Well, maybe that's because you said that was the 400 was the last...
That's the last thing that I found that
letter
was...
Letter that they said it was the final. You said you just read that.
Yeah.
Well, weren't they in bondage?
Final spiritual letter.
400 years in...
Mm-hmm.
Right, 400, yeah. Or 40 years. 400 tribulation. That was just often used.
But anyway, I
and there's 400 years from Malachi to when John the Baptist, when Jesus came. Yeah. There's 400 years there, and then the 400, and we have in Malachi, we have them corrupting the sacrifice, offering the lame and the blind and the diseased and the warning, but the promise, the warning against that, but mm-hmm. the promise of the coming Son. The 400 years they had to pass then, that period of time, for the messenger. You know, the messenger was spoken of in Malachi that was coming.
Well, I just thought it interesting because I think that the ancient Hebrew was just the way that they, you know, depicted things. It certainly had some sort of a hieroglyphic beginning, and then as they were influenced by different neighboring nations, the Phoenicians in particular, and their other neighbor, Arabic neighbors, it changed into more of a what would you call it? Arabic type script. But I thought it would be useful for us to see the original, how it was written.
Well, I didn't even know that they were different in the ancient. There was an ancient Hebrew, and why he felt to change them.
Well, it
might have been just an evolving kind of process.
It was probably just an evolving process. I mean, the Phoenicians had, I mean, like,
but there's,
like you can read in Samuel, they had a lot of... they were busy with Israel at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They were some of the first sailors, really, that we know of as far as creating any kind of a commerce. They were the ones that would go sail all over the place and then bring goods back.
Zebulun is that tribe that cohabited with them, or they were, you know, just have a ship in Zebulun. Is that Virgo? Zebulun is
yeah.
Virgo.
Well, I think Zebulun... Dan and Asher, all of them learned shipbuilding and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
He was a tent maker.
But, you know, we're talking back in, you know, ancient times, they learned all that stuff from the Phoenicians. So there was some sort of cross-cultural interaction there, and that perhaps that's why they changed your thing. Like, on here, it gives you the original ancient, and then it gives you, like, the next evolution of the language, and then it gives you the next evolution of the language, and then it gives you the final one, which is what we've got up here on the board.
Well, what about Sumeria? Didn't they have, was theirs just cuneiform?
It's cuneiform, yeah. A little bit different type.
I'd like to kind of see that sometime and compare it with the Celtic runes, because the runes to me are interesting. You know, I get so much out of them, I can't get any more.
Well, after I looked at this, you know, after I looked at the original ancient Hebrew, there really isn't that much different between that and Celtic runes, you know, Nordic runes. And I've long thought that no coincidence that the Syrian king, Assyrian emperor, king, whatever, at that time in Persia, they had the largest everything. They had the largest amount of land. That's where the tribes that have been in captivity were for so long. And then, for whatever reason, some say he was just enlightened, and some say he just didn't want to feed them no more, you know, released them. So you had, and they figured it was around 4 million Jews, maybe 5 million, or not Jews, but Israel, the rest of Israel, because at that time, really only Benjamin and Judah had stayed in the Promised Land. The rest of them had been taken into captivity. So you had this enlightened king that came along, was like, here, you guys can go your own way. So they poured over the Caucasus Mountains, which is where we get the word Caucasian from, and at the same time in history, Rome started, they were coming up in power, and you have written accounts of, you know, where are these 4 million barbarians come from? Because they poured over the Caucasus Mountains and then dispersed all over Europe.
Well, people move too because there's droughts going on, bad droughts.
Well, no, it's written that the king,
yes,
he basically told them to go. And it can't be a coincidence that 4 million refugees or 4 million barbarians all of a sudden show up from out of nowhere, but at the same time you had 4 million of the House of Israel that poured over the Caucasus Mountains. I mean, they had to be one and the same. 4 million people didn't come from somewhere else.
That'd be the Danites.
Wasn't just the Danites, it was the rest of Israel.
All of Israel. What was their name? Tuas the Danans.
Well, it changed from depending on where they went. Now, the Danites, they have their name all over the place because, like I said, they learned a lot of boating, shipbuilding, you know, naval type navigation stuff from the Phoenicians. And so they kind of, they had been doing that for several hundred years, going to different places and things. And in, for instance, in Ireland, there's a long lore and history about these people that came, and they were named Tuatha De Danann. Well, in Celtic, it means tribe of Dan. Coincidence? Probably not. Is there any way to prove it? No.
That's interesting speculation.
Well, I mean, it's not any further reached believing that Jesus lived. For me.
Sounds reasonable. Do you know the name of the king in history that released him?
Just trying to remember it.
Is it in scripture?
Yeah, it is in scripture, I think.
It's not Cyrus, is it?
No, I think it's his dad. Or his either his dad or his son. He's one of the most famous Persian kings because he supposedly was very enlightened. He was the one of the few kings that he let people worship whatever and however they wanted to. He didn't get involved in that.
That sounds like Cyrus.
It may have been, I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. I didn't know we were going to go that direction, so I didn't look into it this morning. That's all I got.
Very good.
Somebody else wants to tackle the final numbers there, 500 through 900. They're welcome to try that. I couldn't find much on it though, so I don't know where it originally came from. All I could find out was that it was a later addition to the Hebrew language. But there's certainly nothing in the original ancient that coincides with it. The only thing that does is the final.
I'd like to see them do DNA on the population of Israel, see where they all come from.
Really? Well, they were not a people, God
no,
said.
They were. That's what I'm saying. They came from everywhere.
Everywhere. You're right. No telling what their DNA would be.
Well, we wouldn't really have, you'd have to have some sort of a litmus test to go along with that, and you know, you don't have a baseline, so, you know, this happened back, what was it, 800 BC, or no, wait, 400 BC, somewhere around 400 BC is when all that occurred, and that's a long time ago. People have been, you know, being fruitful and multiplying for a long time since then, so.
Yeah, but you know, it's kind of interesting, it just made me think, you know, because you know how so many people post their genealogies on the internet. And as the internet becomes more and more sophisticated, as you know, because all of our information is, we're just posting freely out there. Now, but then there's the computers putting all that together, you know, and what's going to happen, I think, as the future evolves, is we're going to be going more and more finding those connections that go backward in time, connecting ourselves to each other. The computer's going to be able to do that.
Well, all you have
so
to
that
do,
it takes us all the way.
All you have to do is look at the physical description of a standard man of each tribe. They were obviously Caucasians, unless you got some dark-skinned, red-headed, blue-eyed guy.
Gary taught him that. He had a lot of information. I asked Gary that question in private. He said, oh, they were Caucasian. I said, really? He said, oh, yeah. And he said, Stephen, who is it? Jones?
Jones.
Could prove it because he's the historian in this.
Well, I've got a book on it somewhere. I don't know where it is, but it's what it's on. It's written by William H. Bennett.
Oh, Bennett, yeah, I've read.
Yeah, and he takes you from the beginning to the end and shows you all the place names that, you know, were named after various tribes and even their migration at the time of King Cyrus across the Caucasus Mountains and where and how they dispersed in northern Europe and in other places. And it's felt like because of the closeness in language and culture that sprang up after that in Northern Europe, that they were Israeli tribes.
I read something there, and I hadn't heard anything else about it.
But, you know.
But they discovered something in China that predates anything in Africa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gary and Stephen too. I have not heard it personally. Them teach on it, but I know they have, on the white man will rule always.
Oh.
And I'm going.